VentureCast.
A teacher told me just a week or so ago, she said, even kids that hate math think business numbers are fun because they're actually applying it to something, right? And they're seeing the result.
Welcome to Think Business with Tyler, sharing our methods and strategies for success. Join in on our conversations with business owners as we highlight their triumphs and detail how they overcame the challenges they faced while continuing to grow and scale their business. It's time to think life, think success, and think business with your host, Tyler Martin.
Welcome to Think Business with Tyler, the podcast that dives deep into the minds of entrepreneurs and business owners. I'm your host, Tyler Martin, and today we have a truly inspiring episode in store for you. In this episode, we'll be joined by John Foster, founder of Middle School MBA and former corporate strategist. John's innovative approach to education is transforming the way we prepare our children for the world of business. Get ready to hear about the remarkable impact his program is making, teaching complex concepts like capital structures to students as young as 11. But that's not all. John shares his vision of expanding this model to provide low-cost education to millions of children across Asia and Africa. It's a truly fascinating endeavor that's redefining education on a global scale. So if you have a passion for empowering the next generation, this episode is a must listen. Listen in for an engaging conversation that will leave you inspired and hungry for more. It's time to think big and think business. Let's get started. Hey, John, welcome to the Think Business with Tyler podcast show. How's it going?
Terrific. How are you, Tyler?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I'd love to just start with learning a little bit about you. What do you do professionally? Maybe share a little bit about your background and even personally a little bit if you're willing to.
Yeah, sure. These days, I have a startup company called Middle School MBA. We teach business and economics to kids younger and faster than anybody on the planet. But before that, I did a 33-year career in industry. Started out as a chemical engineer and did your typical operating plants and building plants, and then starting things up and eventually moved to the business side and managed businesses and then got into corporate strategy. And so I ran around the world and kind of had this Adam Smith thing of why are some countries rich and some countries poor. And as I worked through all those things in my mind, I'm a slow learner. So I make every mistake along the way in learning something. And once you've done that, You know all the problems and you can show them to other people. So that's kind of how I ended up. I volunteered as a junior achievement consultant and was in classrooms teaching, this JA's curriculum to kids. And I just felt like it could be a lot better. And so I kept adding things to it until at one point I just had my own curriculum. And so I'm teaching it and everybody's loving it. And one day I was walking to class and said to myself, why am I only teaching 14 kids? I should teach 14,000. And so I built all the tools out online and launched Middle School MBA as an education program. So we can drop into any school in the world overnight. We use the teacher who's there so that we're actually blended learning. We're not online learning where some kid is staring at a screen and clicking next. So what we do is we do a mind meld with the teacher. We take a teacher who knows nothing about this stuff. We show them exactly how it works, and we give them all the tools to slides and activities and experiments that they can do with their class. And so as a result, we have the best of both worlds. We come in with very, very high-level curriculum, and then we have a teacher in the room who knows every kid that can pace it and adjust it for their class. So we're able to go really fast with really high concepts to kids just anywhere, practically overnight.
So is your target market the schools or is it the teachers?
It's the schools. Our customers are the schools.
Okay.
But it's their teacher, their kids, their facility, and our curriculum.
So then does the school have to give some type of approval to I mean, is that a tough sales cycle to be able to get a school to go, oh yeah, I'll let you teach this, or what, how does that play out?
Well, it's a long sales cycle in education at all. Okay. It always is. Curriculum gets adopted slowly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not doing the teaching, so I don't interface with their kids. And so it's actually very easy for them. There's nothing for them to download. They just go to our website and log in, and then everything they need streams. So no sort of security problems for them or nothing to put on their computers. And again, we don't interface with their kids. So, you know, everybody's got different safety concerns and qualifications for teachers and all that. We don't fool with any of that because it's their teacher. So we do what we do best. We do the software. We supply what they need for their teacher to just really punch above their weight. And they all know they are. The teachers know they are. The kids know they are. And everybody really gets jazzed about that.
So, like, it sounds like there could be, what, 4 or 5 teachers, depending on grade levels and stuff, in a typical school that could introduce this product. Is that right? Or could teach this product? So assuming that's even close to correct what I'm saying, every school maybe has a potential for, what, 5 licenses? Is that the way that would look?
Well, yeah, what we actually sell it per kid.
Oh, okay.
So there's only, you only need 1 license for your school, but you just say, I've got X number of kids, and we multiply it by the price. And that's how that works.
I see.
It's an annual subscription. So it's a long sales cycle, but once we land somebody, we've got very, very high retention rates.
So is it 1 core? Like, let's say someone, because I know you have the age range, is it 11 to 17, I think, is the age range?
Yes.
Yeah. So if someone gets introduced to the course at 11, let's say I'm a real ambitious teacher, school approves it, 11, I start teaching students. What happens when they go to the next grade level? Is there something else to continue in them? Or is it just that 1 course that they go through and then they pretty much are educated at that point?
Typically, it's 1 course.
Okay.
We do have schools that repeat it again. You know, in the homeschool space, they're very big on repeating. And we've had plenty of schools that have repeated and said, we just got more out of it. You know, it was fine. Other schools, in some cases, we've had schools that say, we want to make business like our imprimatur. You know, this is going to be our marketing base of the school, that we have a complete business program. And in that case, they teach every grade and we augment pieces of it. So we've got, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade material for each year. And because you can just keep growing it. When we're in a high school, they're using exactly the same materials as when we're in a middle school, but the teacher is just moving faster. Right. It's really because the material is graduate level stuff. You know, we're teaching business cycles and capital structure and things that you'll never hear even in undergraduate school. So it's just a matter of how fast and how deeply they want to go into the stuff we provide.
I see. And what are you finding? Like, I'm going to use 11-year-olds, so I'm at the youngest in the range. But what are you finding at 11-year-old when you start talking to them about capital structures? Like, what's your secret sauce? Is there some way you break it down that makes it more digestible? Or
yes.
Take me kind of through that a little bit.
Yes, there is. What we have is sort of the backbone of it is we have a visual 3D model of the economy. And so they can actually see these are businesses and this is materials going between businesses and here's the employees and here's the natural resources and here are the consumers. So all these pieces are there visually in this 3D model. And so we can layer in as much as, you know, make it as complicated or as simple as you like, and then lay it in, zoom in and out of the model. And so basically, they see the whole structure of the economy. We can hide everything but the capital, and then you see the capital structure. We can do the same thing with prices to show the price structure. And then you see how they're all put together. And then each lesson, we zoom into the model and say, okay, we're going to talk about capital. So we zoom into capital and we talk about what is capital and what are its properties and how does it work and what's it for. And then we zoom back out so that you keep everything in perspective. So that's really the secret of how we're able to teach these things to kids so young.
And so the teacher is like, I'm assuming off her computer, is projecting it to all the students. Is that correct?
Exactly. The teacher projects a software on the wall, and the wall walks the class through lessons and activities and experiments and whatever stuff they're going to do. If they're going to build a P&L, then there's a P&L projected on the board and they can plug in numbers. And so, yeah, we're giving the teachers a new superpower, you know, which is to be able to teach business economics to little kids.
Fascinating. What do you think? Have you done any diagnostics on what the market size is for something like this? Because it seems like you're going, I know obviously it's educational software, educational tools, but this is kind of a new area. So have you been able to quantify what a market size for something like this would be?
Well, the market is enormous. If you just talk about the sixth grade, there's over 200,000 sixth grade classes in the United States, over 200,000, and another 200,000 in the rest of the English speaking world. And, you know, we're not limited by any geographical borders. We have schools in Africa and Europe and wherever you want to talk about. The market itself, the total addressable market, is insanely big. You have to segment that down to schools that have like ambitious principals that are ambitious for their kids and have a kind of a bigger vision than what's typically seen. You know, a lot of people in education, they've been brought up in education. They went through education schools and now they're working in education. And business is not really the first thing that comes to mind for them as, you know, the thing they need in their school. But for those that are like, because, you know, business skills are life skills. These are things that everybody should know, how to negotiate, how to deal with people, how to think about ethics, how to make ends meet. All those things are just life skills. And so when principals recognize that and say, you know, I'm tired of sending kids into the world unprepared, they come to us.
What are the objections that you get in terms of someone, a principal, not thinking it's the right fit?
The biggest objection?
Yeah.
Kids this young can't learn economics. You know, it's like, no, we just don't do that. Are you kidding? It's a little too out of the box for them.
Right.
But then once they get past that, there's sort of an echo of that from the teacher who goes, oh, wait, I this is over my head. I can't teach this. Right. That one's pretty easy. Once they look at the software, they go, oh, I got it. I mean, I've had teachers ask me back in the early days, they say, would you come like team teach this with me once so I know what's going on? And within like with a couple of hours, they're like, why are you still in my classroom? You know, get out of here. So those are the first two objections that you get. Then the next one is, well, you know, we're full. We're every minute of the day is spoken for. We don't have time to add something else. And I said, well, look, just look at the marginal thing you're teaching. Which 30 minutes of the day do you feel like you get the least benefit from for your kids? And now compare that to dropping middle school MBA into that slot and decide, is your school better or worse, you know, from making that change?
Huh, that's interesting. And then I would imagine are these mostly private schools or do you have public schools too?
It's both. The low-hanging fruit is the private schools. We're in a lot of elite private schools around the country. They're the fast adopters. But we have several school districts that we're talking to around the country as well. So that's really exciting because, you know, 90% of the kids are in public schools. That's how the numbers shake out. We didn't really expect to be in that segment for another couple of years, but they've started opening it up. And, you know, I think the education space has become very dynamic in the last years. You've got a lot of what they call several states have installed educational savings accounts where the money can go with the kids to whatever school the parents want to send them to. And that, I believe, is putting pressure on the public schools to be more innovative and more open-minded. You know, they're trying to expand their offering somewhat. So it's a really dynamic space. Homeschooling is growing like 12% annually. You've got all sorts of micro schools and private schools, and it's really a cool space. It's certainly not a monolithic, you know, one size fits all thing anymore.
Right. Is it accessible to homeschooling? So can the parent actually license
absolutely.
It? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's very cool with a homeschool. We're not, again, directly to the kid, right? We're to the teacher and the teacher to the kid. So if you're looking for a self-taught homeschool curriculum, that's not us.
Right.
But homeschoolers are very adept at making things work, right? They're used to that. And so what happens is the homeschool parent is the teacher. And if they have three or four kids, then they just run it like any other classroom. If they have only one kid or maybe two kids, then in addition to being the teacher, they may take on some other roles as well. You know, they may take one side of a negotiation or they may pitch a company or they may evaluate a pitch. So they just become involved in a little bit heavier way. But oh yeah, it's really super for, you know, for everybody. When you think about parents and kids, most parents struggle to explain to their kids how they make a living. You know, the kids don't really understand that. And we've had many of them say, you know, since my kid took middle school MBA, I have new ways to talk to them. I can talk about my business, I can talk about my work, and they get it. You know, they know what I mean. They understand what a P&L is. They understand why I have to make a profit. And they understand the pressures of serving customers. So it's really, really cool in that respect.
If you're a business owner feeling stuck in your business, overwhelmed, responsible for everything that happens, and working long hours, Tyler helps his clients develop processes, hire high-performing team members, and better understand their financial metrics and numbers to allow for a more predictable, less hands-on business. To schedule a free, no-pressure consultation, head to thinktyler.com and click the meeting button. Tyler would love to see if he can help you work on your business, not in your business. Schedule a consultation today at thinktyler.com. Think life, think success, think business.
They know what I mean. They understand what a P&L is. They understand why I have to make a profit. And they understand the pressures of serving customers. So it's really, really cool in that respect.
Yeah, sounds cool. Do you get into anything along the lines of like personal budgeting or personal finances? Does any of your program cover that?
No, we don't. We leave that to Dave Ramsey or you know, many other places where you can get personal finance. Our stuff is much a bit higher than that up the ladder. And we've only got 35 hours to do it all. So, but once you understand how to make a P&L, balancing a checkbook is really a piece of cake.
Yeah, the reason I ask is kind of the knock oftentimes in the school system is that there isn't like a personal finance or a budgeting. And a lot of times, you know, kids come straight out of high school, get into credit card debt, don't really know how to get out of credit card debt. And so it kind of seems like just from a potential, you know, when you're marketing your product, I know that's a gap in the educational system. It would seem like that would be an easy kind of check. So, you know, on the checklist of getting in the door of offering that. So anyway, that's where my mind was going. What's the typical feedback you get from students after that, or you hear, I guess I should say, that you hear after they've gone through this? Like, do some of them not, even though you make it very accessible and at a level that most kids can digest it, do some kids have trouble still digesting it? What are the positive and maybe the challenges that you see from kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something I'm really interested in. Whenever I can sit in a classroom and evaluate what's going on, my best guess is that somewhere 85, 90% of the kids get it. They understand the concepts. They see how the pieces fit together. And then some percentage of them, a relatively small percentage, but there's always like one or two kids in the class that go, this is me, this is my life, this is where I'm going to go, you know. But regardless of that, all of them benefit because we show them the whole commercial landscape. This is how the world really works, you know, and this is how people get the things that they need. So whether you're going to be an employee or a homemaker or whatever you're going to do, understanding that puts you way ahead of the game. And I mean, we get some cool feedback. Like a principal told me she was standing in the lunch line and heard these two sixth grade girls talking. One says to the other one, how much do you think the profit margin is on those Nutri-Grain bars? And so we're in their heads. They adopt the business lingo. They use it in their other classes. They, you know, we have these activities where they're negotiating or they're pitching companies, and stuff happens, you know, during these negotiations. And so you develop this lore around the program. You know, remember when Billy lost his butt to Sally in that negotiation, you know, and they talk about these things over and over. We become part of the school's culture. So it's teachers say that we change their entire worldview for kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's huge. I mean, I know, you know, when I went through school, there's certain things that happen educationally that are just so impressionable upon you and just kind of live with you for many, if not forever, years. And it's empowering. I mean, there's terminology and things they're hearing that maybe, you know, profit margins I crack up with because, you know, my core client is oftentimes business owners. And a lot of business owners don't even totally, at least coming into conversations, understand fully what profit margins are or how to compute them. And so to be able to give someone that much of an advance in life, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, you know, and we do these exercises where we optimize factory. We have a factory that makes four products. You can only make so many of each product and so many in total. So you have to choose not to make something. And so we say, okay, so here's this factory. How should we run it? And there's like a thousand different combinations that you can have. And we said, well, here's some information about these various products. You know, this one de-ices airplanes and this one movie stars like. How are you going to do it now? And they just fight about it. You know, how do you do it? And then we say, okay, here's how much profit each one earns. And boom, everybody's on the same page, right? They all agree this is exactly how we're going to run our factory. And then we tell them, so instead of profit, here's the revenue for this product and here's the cost. And then they figure out how much profit is and boom, do the same thing again. Pretty soon in their heads, they just by inspection, they look at the numbers. They go, okay, this is the best one. You know, by very quickly, 3, 4, 5 iterations. And all of a sudden they're figuring profits in their head and optimizing the factory. A teacher told me just a week or so ago, she said, even kids that hate math think business numbers are fun. Because they're actually applying it to something, right? And they're seeing the result.
Yeah, so. It brings it to life. It has a purpose.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. What's your grand vision here? Like, is it this product and just get it into as many hands as you can? Or do you have like a bigger vision of where your company can go?
There's a couple of things there. One is what you just said, get this into as many hands as possible. Then we've got a project going on now in Africa with super low cost private schools. These are schools that operate on like, I don't know, 10 cents a day per kid. They don't have a floor. They don't have electricity. And their parents are super poor, but their parents are coughing up 10 cents a day to send their kids to school. And we figured out a way that we can get projectors, battery powered projectors out of China for $20 FOB. And then put our curriculum on it. And what we want to do is find a local company there in that country, Nigeria, for instance, and have them sponsor the lesson. So go to the company and say, okay, look, for 15 cents a kid, you can have your name on every slide in this lesson. And now we have a business model for getting the best curriculum in the world into classrooms in the middle of nowhere with nothing, right? And once that works, then we turn around and say, okay, who's the best history teacher in the world, right? And if you're doing this for a million kids, it's a functional business model that can work anywhere. So that's the super grand vision.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but that what a great idea. I mean, what a great way to get support for the product while getting visibility for whoever's supporting it.
And I mean, you teach a million kids across Asia and Africa business and economics. You're gonna get 3 Steve Jobs out of that, or you know, 5 Elon Musk. I mean, who knows?
Very cool. Wow. I love that. I love that concept. Cool stuff. So, hey, I've got a couple fun questions. You've already answered kind of in my mind where you could go with this. So I think I'm going to switch gears into my couple fun questions. For my first one, you've had a long journey, engineer, venture capitalist, corporate strategy. Now you're starting your own gig in an area that is interesting because I'm always fascinated, by the way, a little tangent here. I talk to so many people that are doing their own ventures. And I'm always amazed they get into ventures that aren't necessarily related to what they've done most of their career. I mean, I realize the educating part you have, but, or the learning about it you have, but with kids, it's kind of like a unique twist. And I'm always fascinated whenever I see people doing that. It's so cool that you're in a kind of a unique area that you're trying to forge the market in. So my question to you is this, is there a business or even a life tip, something you've learned along the way that you could share with us that maybe we could apply and either make our business or life better?
You know, for me, it's only associate with the best people, whoever you bring on board, whoever you, I mean, I love all my customers. They're great people. If anybody's unhappy with us, I just give them their money back and that's that. No arguments, no nothing. And it's frequently you do without, like I'll be looking for somebody to help me and I can't really find who I want. I'll just live without it for a while until I can find that really top-notch person. And that just pays enormous dividends across the board. So my main thing is only deal with the really best people you can get your hands on.
I love that. Do you have any criteria of what you define as like the best people? Is it a gut feel? Is it certain history that they've had? A little bit of everything? I'd be curious.
Yeah, for me, when we were hiring in industry, we were in a relatively technical field, but we said what we want are brains and attitude. You know, you may not have the exact experience that we're looking for, but if you're smart, we can teach you. And if you have a good attitude, you know, if you're motivated and willing to learn, then we want you. And then since leaving there, you know, I've added to that really ethics and principles. Is that just have to be? There's just no room for anybody that's a little bit shady or a little bit dishonest or anything like that.
Yeah, that plays in that gray area too much.
Right.
There's no room for those type. Yeah, I get it. Okay, that's great. I really love that feedback. And then another one I love to ask, is there something you're enjoying right now, whether it be a book, a podcast, a show, something that maybe you could share with us and we can get some enjoyment from?
I'm reading Peter Attia's book right now, Outlive. And it's a terrific book. I love his approach. You know, he started as an engineer, then he went into medicine, and then he dropped out of medicine because he was frustrated that medicine was so slow to improve. You know, he was at Johns Hopkins, I believe, and they just wouldn't. It was too stodgy. You know, he said, look, we can do better, and they weren't interested in doing better. So he dropped out of that. And then he came back to it sort of as an analyst later. And so he's a brilliant guy. And he's got a lot to say about what kills people. You know, what are you likely to die from? What are your odds? And how to try to deal with that. But he's brutally honest and just scary smart. So it's a fun read.
It sounds like it. I'll put that in the show notes, but I'll have to check that out. I've heard of it. I've just never got around to reading it. It feels like my reading list always gets longer. I never catch up on it.
Exactly.
Well, hey, John, thanks so much. I can't thank you enough to share about your business, some of the intimate parts of it, some of your strategies about it. Your website is middleschoolmba.com. Once again, middleschoolmba.com. I'll put those in the show notes at thinktyler.com. If people wanted to reach out to you, is that the place to do it, or is there anywhere else you'd like them to go?
No, that's the place. We have a contact page there. You can email me directly. Love to hear from people.
Very cool. Well, hey, thanks again for being a guest, and can't wait. Maybe you can come back again in the future, and hopefully when you're in your next rung of your success, we can talk about it.
That would be great. I'd love to, Tyler. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. Take care.
That's all for this episode of Think Business with Tyler. But we have plenty more resources to help you in your pursuit of business excellence on our website at thinktyler.com. If you'd like to be featured in a future episode of the show, feel free to reach out to us on social media at think_Tyler. We look forward to helping you think life, think success, and think business.
Welcome to Sara Talk Solutions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've tuned into a bit of a different type of show. I'm Sara B and I'm your host. You can find me on my IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA. I talk about amazing, relevant conversations and topics and what functions that goes on in this magical, wonderful, wonderful city of the City of Angels. My IG, which is Aussie_Sara_LA.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Peter.
We're the founders of Electrocast Media, bringing you great podcasts like Nightmare Road Stories, Tech Talk Revolution, and Bodacious Minds.
Electrocast networks include Ruby for female empowerment, the Best Business Network, and GPN for geopolitics. We built this company to create community and amplify diverse voices, and we really appreciate your support.
So, keep listening to Electrocast podcasts and hear the culture.
Electric acid.